Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. Thanks for tuning into our show today. Before we get started, a word from our sponsors.
When 6-year-old Hannah's brutal honesty is mistaken for lying, she stops speaking entirely. Her family, her community, and eventually the entire nation are ripped apart by her silence. One word could put an end to the chaos if Hannah could only find her voice. Hannah's Voice by Rob Grindstaff is available at Amazon and many other fine bookstores. Liberty lovers will appreciate Hannah's struggle against authority and her desire to be left alone. So get your copy today.
And thanks for coming back. Appreciate you guys being loyal listeners. If you like the show today, do us a favor. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. If you don't have an Apple device, you can find us on Stitcher. Go to Stitcher.com, download the app, and you can get the Freedom Report every time we upload a podcast. Enjoy the show. Today's Monday, June 15th, and I'm your host, Austin Peterson, with my co-host, Laura Myers. Laura, how you feeling today?
It's a Monday.
It's Monday. Laura and I both have a case of the Mondays.
Trudging through the leftover weekend sludge.
Yes, exactly. She and I are both sitting here trying not to fall asleep. I've finished my second cup of coffee. I had an enormous cup of coffee and then a second one, and there just isn't enough coffee in the world, it feels like, some days. But we're going to get through this, power through this topic, because it is an exciting topic. It's a funny topic. It's an important topic. It's the biggest news of the day, biggest news of the week, and possibly the month, and maybe shaping up to be for the year, just simply because of all of the crashing headlines surrounding the story of Rachel Dolezal. And Rachel Dolezal, if you don't know, is the charlatan of the NAACP in Washington. In Spokane, Washington, the head of the NAACP, who was outed as being a white chick. Did you see the movie? What was the movie with Keenan Ivory-Wayans? It was White Chicks, you know?
I've never seen that, but I've heard lots of references to it.
That is just a shame. All right, you need to get slapped for that or something, because White Chicks is honestly one of the funniest movies, I think, in the last decade. It's a great movie where two black guys pretend to be white chicks.
Okay.
And in order to, like, bust a criminal, like, syndicate. And so what we're talking about is, in the reverse, we're talking about black chick.
I did see someone this weekend say that Iggy Azalea looked like one of the guys from that movie, though.
Really? Yeah. That's actually kind of rude, but it's funny. But that's a great movie, White Chicks. But now we're talking about a white chick who is pretending to be a black chick. We're talking about Rachel Dolezal, who is in the headlines because she was outed on television as being from white parents. Although we haven't figured out, sort of, the one question that I'm the most curious of that nobody is asking is, is she a spray tan, or like,
how does she get
her skin so dark? Right,
There is an orange tint, and so normally that hints to spray tan.
Yeah,
but I was thinking about, like, the logistics behind all of that.
Yeah, she's very orange, but I guess it's true what they say, that orange is the new black. Thank you. So everybody's talking about this story because of the timing with the transgender movement sort of coming into their own, with the advent of Caitlyn Jenner, formerly Bruce Jenner, now Caitlyn Jenner,
mm-hmm.
gracing the cover of Vanity Fair, and there have been a million parodies about comparing Bruce Jenner and Rachel Dolezal. And I'm going to read from the Washington Post this morning, which is a story, it says, which is pretty fair, that talks about the surprising ways that Caitlyn Jenner and Rachel Dolezal are now linked. And then we're going to talk about the implications for what it means to identify as another gender or identify as another race. Now, I was calling this sort of mentality out, like, way before this Rachel Dolezal story broke, because I was always saying on my Facebook page, I identify as African American, but I'm Chicano on the inside. Because the whole attitude of the trans movement is that, like, you can't tell me what I identify as, and I am a woman if I say I'm a woman, and if I'm even, and I can identify as woman and still be attracted to other women. There's a great South Park episode, actually, on this called Sissy, I think, where Cartman pretends to be transgender in order to get his own bathroom, right? Because that's the controversy is like, you know, are women, like, men who identify as women, are they allowed into a girl's bathroom? And this actually does become a problem because there's going to be lawsuits over things like this. And one of the solutions to this is, we just need to put in, you know, gender neutral bathrooms, right? That's an example, which means no urinals for guys, which kind of cuts down on the time, which makes it more efficient.
Poor thing.
Well, hey, you know, I mean, like, we're talking about efficiency here. We're sacrificing efficiency for political correctness, which is, you know, never good, I think. But we're talking about Rachel Dolezal. Obviously, there's no, like, segregated fountains anymore. You know what I mean? It's not as if, like, Rachel Dolezal is going to be, you know, drinking from the colored fountain or something like that. There's not any, that kind of segregation going on, really.
She wants her safe spaces, though, right?
The
minorities now demand their safe spaces.
Yeah, exactly. Free from white people. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And she was caught by the National Review as having said, I wouldn't feel safe going to a Tea Party rally. And this was in an interview back in 2010. Right. She said she could only feel safe going to a Tea Party rally if she was there with, like, a crowd of people, that she had, like, people who would get her back.
Well, and she also, there was a Facebook post I saw when we wrote a story on her last week that she went to 12 Years a Slave on a date. She went to the movie theater to go see the movie 12 Years a Slave. And she talked about how she was, you know, discriminated against because the people in the theater would turn to look at her to judge her reactions as the keynote black girl in the audience.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know. And she plays it up.
All right, and a buddy of mine just sent me a picture this morning of her speaking from the National Review. Jonah Goldberg tweeted with her holding a book that said "How to Be Black," and she's
"How to Be Black for Dummies."
How to be black for dummies. And now we have the left, the social justice warriors of the left are all sort of eating each other over this because you see now how logic is not contradictory, right? Logic and reason don't contradict one another. It's an example of logic because logic does not contradict. You know, A always equals A, B equals B, C equals C. Mm-hmm. But in the strange world of now we live in transracial world, you can say I'm this even though I'm this, you know. And let's be honest here, in the differences between race and gender, I'm going to play devil's advocate, which I always like to do, which always gets me in trouble with my audience, but I like to be objective, even if I'm biased. There is a difference between gender and race, okay? Gender and race are not the same thing. Has more of a cultural impact, or races, you know, general people who have, you know, should happen to share maybe the same skin tone. But in terms of race, there really is, in my opinion, only one race, the human race. And, you know, one of the comments that Rachel said was, we're all from the African continent. And, of course, that was a way to deflect, you know, the fact that, you know, yes, in fact, we are all African. But in terms of culture and race, I'm not black. You know, I'm certainly not black, and no amount of spray paint.
You're wearing cargo shorts, you're not black.
I'm wearing cargo shorts, and actually these are non-cargo shorts. Oh. I'm tired of all the crap I'm getting from girls these days about cargo shorts. So these are non-cargo looking shorts, or just khaki shorts, so just stop giving me crap, okay? I'm a typical white male, all right, cisgender, heteronormative.
Triggered.
So triggered. All right, so let me read from the Washington Post, and then we can suss out the facts, and we can separate facts from fiction. And, I didn't get to finish. So race, obviously, is what it is, but it's different from gender. Gender, in a sense, is a social construct. I know that's going to piss off a lot of conservatives for me to say that, because gender is what you identify with. Your sex, your biological sex, is what can't be changed. So when you're talking, when conservatives and libertarians and people who are criticizing Bruce Jenner, Caitlyn Jenner's transition, say, oh, well, she's still a man. In the sense that sexually, like from an XXY chromosome mm-hmm. perspective, yes, that is still Bruce Jenner. Even if he removes his penis, will still be a man.
Yeah.
And you know how we know this? Because what was our biggest story last week? Transgender MMA fighter destroys female opponent. And that was such a huge hit, even though it happened almost a year ago, because of the discussion that's going on right now about trans issues, right? And transracial, I'm not sure if that's really a thing necessarily. I mean, if it is going to be a thing, then it's something. It's definitely we're at peak transracialism right now.
They need to print more of those How to Be Black books.
How to Be Black book, right? Exactly. But when it comes to transgender, a gender is just what you sort of identify as. Your sex, you can't be transsex. You know, you're just going to be what you are. Now, there are anomalies, things like hermaphrodites, for example, and those do exist in nature as a state of nature. Seahorses, right? Yeah. Well, and well, there are humans that have those traits as well, and so we have to be objective and honest and say, call it out and say that that is what it is. But let's discuss. This is from the Washington Post: the surprising ways that Caitlyn Jenner and Rachel Dolezal are now linked. Why is Caitlyn Jenner treated as a groundbreaking cultural hero and Rachel Dolezal condemned as a charlatan? If it's okay to be transgender, what's wrong with being transracial? Let me answer that first question right off the bat and say that the difference is that Caitlyn, Bruce Jenner, wasn't lying to get minority status in order to achieve some sort of a benefit. You know, she was doing this simply for the fact that he identified as a woman. The difference between him and her, or I guess it's always unclear. The difference between Caitlyn and Rachel is that Rachel did this and got a full ride to Howard University, et cetera, et cetera. Let's go on. With those taunts as the weekend opened, the right baited the left and the mainstream media, which to conservatives are generally one and the same. Tend to agree. Many in the mainstream took the bait, and then the cases of Jenner and Dolezal, they were forever intertwined. In People, for example, a psychologist explained why Rachel Dolezal's case can't be compared to Caitlyn Jenner. Most people who are transgender, as early as 4 or 5, believe already that at some level they are childborn with the wrong anatomy, Daryl Wing Sue said. I don't see this with Dolezal. Jenner, should anyone need reminding, is the Olympian formerly known as Bruce Jenner, while Dolezal is the Spokane NAACP president who self-identifies as black, facing claims from a white Montana couple that they are her parents. Dolezal's story unfolded last week after she refused to answer a reporter's question, "Are you an African American?" It's important to note that Jenner and Dolezal are indeed very different. Dolezal, accused of misrepresenting important parts of her past, is under investigation by local authorities and may have committed fraud. Jenner is not and did not. Jenner is transgender. Though Dolezal may be transracial, this much less widely accepted term may have no meaning. But these public figures, Jenner of the Wheaties cereals box, of course, vastly better known, were both revealed to be something very different than what we thought they were. And hours after the Dolezal story broke, many were using her and Jenner as cannon fodder in the culture wars, and we certainly did too. Just last week, the President of the United States congratulated Bruce Jenner on his courageous decision to pretend to be a woman, and the entire left bursting into spasms of ecstasy over a collectively insane decision to ratify the notion that men can magically become women. Ben Shapiro of Breitbart wrote in a post sarcastically titled, "Everything You Need to Know About Transracial Hero Rachel Dolezal." Today, the entire left is struggling to explain how a white woman who identifies herself as black is not, in fact, black. Conservative radio host Wayne Dupree was more concise. Rachel Dolezal figured if Bruce Jenner could do it, what the hell, he wrote. The right's argument about Dolezal answered a society that more or less had just welcomed Jenner's transformation with a much-lauded Diane Sawyer interview and a Vanity Fair cover. There is an objective truth, the line goes. Jenner is a man, Dolezal is white. How can one be criticized while the other is praised? Very, very important point. This is Sean Davis at The Federalist who wrote, "Try as I may, I can't find any person of any notoriety defending Dolezal's bravery or courage," which of course brings us to Bruce/Caitlyn Jenner. How exactly is what Dolezal did any different than what Jenner is currently doing? Rachel Dolezal is not black, and Caitlyn Jenner is not a woman. He added, "And yet the left and the media would have us believe that Bruce Jenner can become a woman by changing his name, his wardrobe, his makeup, and his hair. How can you logically square the belief that Jenner is a hero while Dolezal is a mental case? Well, you can't." Charles C.W. Cook wrote in the National Review, "Those who are sympathetic to Jenner will still have a practical problem if people do start claiming in earnest that they feel more comfortable pretending to be what they're not. Why? Well, because our present calls for acquiescence are not predicated principally on the integrity of objective truth, but on the perceived need to propitiate the person who is making the claim. On the front line of these battles, science is frankly an afterthought." Now, that was a lot of big words there, Charles, and a lot of nice alliteration, but what is he trying to say here? Charles C.W. Cook is saying basically that that the calls for acquiescence, meaning the bow to their demands, is not based on the desire for objective truth, but the idea that we need to propitiate the person, meaning we need to make them feel better about themselves. And he's right. There, you know, to an extent, I argued on my Facebook page the other day that the issue with people like Rachel Dolezal and Caitlyn Jenner is not that I have a problem with people identifying with whatever they want. It's that they demand that we accept it and that we must bow to their claims. We must submit to the belief that they are a woman or they are black. Now, in polite conversation, you know, in friends and family, do I, you know, try and pick on people and say, okay, well, I'm just rejecting what you are outright? Not really, because like there pretty much is almost nothing that offends me anymore. There really just really isn't. There really isn't much that offends me. I mean, you know, being in the media, and you know, you take a lot of slings and arrows of outrageous fortunes. Here, it's my little Shakespeare quote for the day. You take a lot of crap, and I've seen a lot of crap, and I've seen some stuff that, you know, you and I would, you'd never want to look at together because it would be too awkward and uncomfortable. I've seen some shit, you know. So I'm not offended by anything. But the one thing that does offend me is when someone demands that I change my perception of reality in order to accommodate their viewpoint on things.
Yeah.
And so I will absolutely say, oh yeah, okay, Bruce, yeah, you're a woman, and I would call him Caitlin, you know, I'll call him Caitlin, just like I actually have some friends that are trans, and they're now women, and they're post-surgery, you know, and some of them aren't, but again, out of my love for fellow humans, you know, will I, you know, not bully them? Of course not. But do I believe they are a woman in the sense, sexually? No. Gender, you know, what you choose, that's fine. And again, it's none of my business. But I think the problem here with this, Lauren, this is what I said in my post, is that the social democrats, the social justice warriors, some of them want us to acquiesce to their definitions of things because they know that if they can get us to believe a lie, they can get us to believe anything. And the famous French author, satirist, playwright, Voltaire said that those who can be made to believe absurdities can be made to commit atrocities. So these people know that if they can get people to believe whatever they want, whatever they say, they can fundraise on the back of it, and they can recruit an army of loyal, unthinking sycophants.
Yeah, people. I'm a public relations major. That's our whole goal, is to be able to like effectively communicate, and it's just a certain way of manipulation, I guess. But,
sure.
Yeah.
It's to get you to think the way that I want you to think.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether there's any objective truth.
Yeah, and if you study, you know, like World War II propaganda, it's the same thing there.
Right.
If you tell people the same message over and over again,
mm-hmm. They'll
soon believe it to be true.
That was the Goebbels, the propaganda minister's line. He says, you know, tell a lie told often enough, mm-hmm. you know, is believed, and also the bigger the lie, you know, the more people will say, oh, there's no way they could lie about something so big.
Yeah.
Listen to this. Adding worthy reporting to strong rhetoric, the National Review unearthed a little-discussed New York Times story from 2010 in which Dolezal told a reporter that the very Caucasian Tea Party movement made her nervous, the Times wrote. Though raised in a conservative family, Miss Dolezal, who's a multiracial, said she could not imagine showing her face at a Tea Party event. To her, what stands out are the all-white crowds, the crude depictions of Mr. Obama as an African witch doctor, and the signs labeling him a terrorist, excuse me. It would make me nervous to be there unless I went with a big group, she said. Well, I mean, I guess that can make sense. I mean, if people are like swinging around the, you know, black man at the end of the noose and all that stuff. And there certainly were racist people. I was at the Tea Party events, and almost all of them.
Sure.
There were. You know, they were, and those were the people that, of course, the media always focused on. Not, you know, the 75% grandmas and grandpas who just, you know, want a better future for, you know, their kids like you mm-hmm. and me. But they, you know, the two or three people who have, you know, the Obamas, Marxist, Kenyan from Africa, you know what I mean? And so, of course, those are the people that we're going to have to answer for, unfortunately. So listen to this. This is Patrick Blanchfield from the Daily Beast. He's a student of psychoanalytic theory. He says, her case, Rachel Dolezal's case, suggests more than a deep-seated problem, something more than just a highly narcissistic form of histrionic personal disorder. or an unhealthy need for obsession and approval. You know, he cited a February interview in which Dolezal alleged she was punished by her parents with a whip used to ward baboons away in South Africa. Pretty similar, she told her interview, to what was used as whips during slavery. God, see, shut the fuck up.
So see, here's like where I object to her case. If you want to pretend to be black, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, if you're transgender, I do not care. The only point that I start to care is when you manipulate the cause to like mock real things, like actual like mock rape. I mean, she in the article that says the things you need to know about her, she accuses her parents and her ex-husband of abuse, a false date rape claim, and then there's nothing that confirms that she was whipped by her parents, but I mean, I can't trust her at this point, so.
Yeah, right.
But when you start to mock actual, like, real problems and use it just for a tool of victimization, that's where I have a problem with the issue. Like, you are abusing the cause.
Dolezal gives us stories replete with images of grotesque violence, beatings, and whippings, Blanchfield wrote, like slavery, like torture. These are highly choreographed, ritualized, sadomasochistic scenes, and to psychotherapists, they're nothing new. And, you know, she was interviewed about reporting on a potential hate crime, which, you know, it was that she, in her post office box, which only two people have keys and access to, she got a threatening letter in her post office box, right? And the problem is the stamps weren't canceled out. So there's no way that anybody in the post office would have put that in the box because they would have canceled out the stamps and there would have been the fact that it was on there. So the implication is, the allegation is that she faked that. She made it herself. Her or the other person who has access to that key box, which we don't know who that is yet. That hasn't been unearthed. But somebody most likely faked that hate crime reporting. And if you actually watch the full like 10-minute interview where at the end she's outed as being white, she's being questioned about other accusations that she made, which was that, you know, she was on her front porch with her kids and they found a noose, right?
Yeah.
A noose. Uh-huh. Right. There was a rope, and the implication is that someone had left a noose out to, like, you know, supposedly threaten
them. That's the first thing I think when I see ropes.
Oh, yeah. When I see ropes laying around, I think it's, you know.
Racist,
you know. Strange fruit in the trees. Then there was the point that faking race, as Dolezal may have done, is not the same as being transgender as Jenner is. The weight of womanhood and the weight of dark skin, after all, are very different. Had Dolezal accepted the hardships of being black? Slate asked. God, Slate. It feels like Dolezal is adopting the culture without carrying the burdens, Jamel Bowie wrote. And with the fake father and the fake children, it seems like she's deceiving people for the sake of being an a la carte blackness, in which you take the best parts and leave the pain aside. What are the best parts of being black? Being a victim? Is that what it is?
I just want to be able to twerk.
Well, you know, you can, because Miley Cyrus, who ripped that.
No!
Miley Cyrus, no. Absolutely. It's white appropriation of black culture all the time, you know? So white people can twerk, you know, we didn't invent it, we just appropriated it. But here's the thing, she goes, adopting the culture without carrying the bold burdens, Jamel Bowie wrote. She said, with the fake father and the fake children, it seems like she's deceiving people for the sake of an a la carte blackness in which you take the best parts and leave the pain aside. So I'm reading that again just because I'm like, you know, what do they possibly think that, I mean, the benefits are? Because the benefits were the benefits that she got, which was the free ride to college, which was the affirmative action. So is she saying that that the benefits of being a black person are that you get special flower status?
The benefits at this point of being a black woman are, yeah, like reaping what you can get because of the mistreatment in history. Yeah, it's back and forth.
Yeah.
And so, but on that mark, I mean, I could argue that transgender men that are transgender women have a la carte, you know, treatment too. They don't have to have periods.
Okay, so now I want to use this note to transition to a related discussion that George Will got in big trouble last year for writing an opinion column where he was talking about progressivism on campus and how colleges are becoming victims of progressivism because of the new, like, you know, anti-rape culture movement of the left and feminists. And he writes here in the Washington Post on June 6th of 2014 about how colleges and universities are being educated by Washington and finding the experience excruciating. They're learning that when they say that campus victimizations are ubiquitous and that when they make victimhood a coveted status that confers privileges, victims proliferate. And so how this relates tangentially to the case of Rachel Dolezal is that here we have someone saying that, you know, the goods and bads of being a black, she wanted the a la carte blackness, the good parts mm-hmm. without the bad parts. The good parts being the free ride to college and the being able to get a job filing as an African American. Now, the NAACP says that they don't hire people based on race. BS. That's just what they say. I don't have to believe that, but that's what they say. But when it comes to what George F. Will was saying, he was pilloried. I mean, he got his butt kicked. There were college protests on campus that, you know, to stop George Will from coming to speak because he had said that people want to be a coveted victim status. Well, is that not what this person is saying? That Rachel Dolezal if people like Rachel Dolezal are incentivized because they want to.
When you incentivize victimization, there's going to be fraud, just like with any other thing.
Yes, when you confer official privileges upon and create protected classes, as they would say, then you're going to get people seeking it out simply for the fact that they get the benefits of it. And don't just think about it. This is schoolyard logic, okay? Do you remember the kid who used to like fall down on the playground and there'd be nobody around? They'd be like, and they'd get up, you know, and be like, but then they would fall down like near people and they would scream. Oh, they would scream their bloody head off, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It sort of reminds me of European soccer players who they're like, you know, somebody like flicks them on the ear and they're like, my ear, gone. And it's like, you know, he was like, it was choking him to death or something. They're fakers, right? Because they want to get the yellow flag. Yeah, they want to get the attention. They want to get the flag thrown. They want to get their opponent. They want to be able to use their victimhood status to point out their enemies and say, he did bad to me, teacher. You know what I mean? Like, and it sounds to me like the Rachel Dolezal mentality here is exactly the problem that we face with the minority community as a whole. You know, it's very difficult for people like yourself and myself to say anything critical, you know, even mildly critical of minority culture without being deemed racist. And you can't always speak in generalizations, especially mm-hmm. as individuals as we are. But when we're talking about wide swaths of population, you're talking about coveted victim status, people who seek victim status and people who seek privileges for the benefits for the sake of being minorities, whether they be African Americans or whether they be women trying to get more access to better jobs or school or anything like that. People are going to take advantage of the system, and it's going to stack up against, you know, the majority. In some parts, you know, minorities have to be protected from the tyrannies of the majority, and in other senses, majorities have to be protected from the tyranny of a minority. And that's how this, you know, constitutional system of checks and balances that we have is supposed to work. Unfortunately, that's not how it's working. So continuing the theme here, a writer in the Huffington Post says, Dolezal might not be enough of a victim. A piece headlined, Why Comparing Rachel Dolezal to Caitlyn Jenner is Detrimental to Both Trans and Racial Progress. Transracial identity is a concept that allows white people to indulge in blackness as a commodity without having to actually engage with every facet of what being black entails. Discrimination, marginalization, oppression, and so on, Zeba Blay wrote. It plays into racial stereotypes and perpetuates the false idea that it's possible to feel a race as Jenner felt she was a woman. Salon, also a publisher of Bruce Jenner's remarkable authenticity, What He Teaches Us About Life, Laughter, and Vulnerability, weighed in with what may be the ultimate Dolezal takedown. This isn't about being an ally or making the family of your choosing or even how one feels on the inside, Mary Elizabeth Williams wrote. It's about apparently flat-out deception. You want to live your truth. That's not how you go about it. And it's an insult to anyone honestly trying to do just that to suggest anything otherwise for even a moment. The issue here is honesty, Wing Su told People. Deception is being used, and at some level she may believe some of the things she's saying, but at another level I think she's very conscious of the statements and actions she's engaged in. This battle, of course, has no end in sight, but until that magical day when conservatives abandon hang-ups about fluid gender identities and liberals stop fretting about victimhood, Perry will follow thrust in the culture wars. Sarah Palin's quip about Dolezal perhaps represented the quality of some of this discussion. I shouldn't laugh this hard, the former Republican vice presidential candidate wrote. Interesting. So here we have the culture wars, just as they described it. A parry will always follow a thrust, right? And so the thrust was the was the Bruce Jenner, Caitlyn Jenner moment from the left. You know, it's like demand acceptance. And then when the parry came, when the NAACP spokesman was outed and the conservatives parried this successfully. I think they did it. I think there's a fantastic job by our members, fellow members on the free market right, who tend to be a little too socially conservative for my taste. And that, I think, tends to be their downfall, but it was a beautiful moment. The famous line that I just laughed and read out loud to myself a few times was Ben Shapiro's article there from Breitbart, where he says that this story broke as proof that, hold on, I've actually got it right here. I want to read it because it's just too funny. On Friday, after a long news week, the story of Rachel Dolezal hit the press, proving once again that God loves us and wants us to be happy.
I saw that too. That was so funny. I also saw, so there's that magazine cover that's floating around with the photoshopped head of Rachel Dolezal on Caitlyn Jenner's, you know, Vanity Fair cover. And yeah, so it has her. And then there's another version of it where the face is badly photoshopped in there, and then it says, "Call me Rachel."
Call me Rachel.
Like R apostrophe C H E L L E. You know what I'm saying? That's what's underneath it. Call me Rachel. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Which was fine.
Right, right. So obviously, you know, Laura and I are heteronormative, white, privileged, cis, shitlords.
Trigger happy. Yeah. Trigger happy. There you go.
Trigger happy. And so we do not know what it's like to be black, and we don't know what it's like to be transracial. But there's no bigotry on our part. It isn't an issue of us, you know, having any kind of disgust for anyone's lifestyle. That's simply not what it is. And we're not racist because, again, as I stated earlier, it's a human race. I think that if you want to talk about social constructs, race is a social construct. That is a real social construct. Because really, what is it we're talking about? We're talking about cultures, right? What's the difference in culture? And when you're talking about appropriating blackness, you're not talking about really appropriating an ethnicity. You're talking about appropriating a culture. And let me explain to you why. Because black people from the United States are not the same as black people from Europe. They may share similar, you know, historical origins from a certain part of the sub-Saharan African continent at a certain period of time, you know, when humans were disparate and we divided into our different groups that gave us and the environmental factors that gave us what we call our race nowadays. There are some minor differences between the races. Some of us are like, for example, African Americans are more prone to sickle cell anemia, and you might say, oh, well, that's proves that there's a difference between the races. Well, not really. Not really. There are always minor variations, genetic variations in people of the same species, but we're all the same species, and we have two different sexes. But gender is something that we can identify with. Culture is something that you can identify with. But you can't change your sex, and you can't change your race. The race being the fact that we are all humans, but you know, again, the culture is the problem. I think it's really what it is. This isn't an issue of us trying to fight gender identities or race issues, Laura. I think that what we're really talking about here is how do we solve a problem of a cultural problem? And you may say, well, what does libertarianism have to do with any of this? Well, libertarianism has something to say about this when the social democrat left are pushing legislation, you know, forcing changes in schools, demanding that we accept them and their lifestyle. Fine, I accept you. I accept your lifestyle. Not everybody has to.
Yeah, and you incentivize it at the inconvenience or
and the inconvenience of someone else. People. That's correct. You know, you can lie to me all you like, say whatever you like to my face, and I'm in order to be nice, might not say you look fat in that dress, you know, or whatever the equivalent is. But I will absolutely believe what I want to believe, and I've sworn upon the altar of God of eternal hostility against every form of tyranny known to man, like my buddy TJ. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, Laura, thanks for being back on the show today. We're looking forward to all your posts today. We got some funny stuff. What was it? We got the Australian senator.
I'm so excited.
He's got a butt hurt report form.
Yeah, hurt feelings complaint form. Yeah, the Liberal Democratic Party.
Libertarian senator from Australia. Don't let the Liberal Democratic name fool you. But he's got a new report form that you can file. It's like, show us on the doll where the internet touched you, you know?
Yeah, so they shared it on Facebook, and the post says, in response to a rising level of what can only be described as butthurt regarding both Liberal Democrats' policy and the various utterances of our public figures, We have decided to streamline our grievance processes. Should anything any of us do, say, think, or look like we're thinking or doing or saying cause your knickers to bunch unceremoniously, please feel free to fill out one of our handy complaint forms.
Oh man, I can't wait. All right, well, guys, gotta go to libertarianrepublic.com to go check that story out, so don't forget to do that by the time you guys actually listen to this show. I'm sure that the post will be up. And thanks a lot for listening. Don't forget, go to itunes.com, leave us a 5-star review. A 5-star written review will help us spread the message of freedom. And after that, if you don't have Apple, you can all, of course, go to stitcher.com, get us there, and don't forget, come back every single day to your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at the libertarianrepublic.com.